You're listening to the Incarcerated Christian Podcast, where we shine light on the dark side of Christianity and how it affects people and communities. I'm Robin Mitchell Stroud, and I'm here with my co-host, Deborah Levy Martinelli. We'll be covering a variety of topics, from individual survivor stories, including our own, to the influence of religion on our national politics. To learn more about the podcast, visit our website, theincarceratedchristian.com, or connect with us on TikTok and Instagram at The Incarcerated Christian, and on Twitter at @TICC_podcast_. Now, on to the show. Our guest today is Carla Hinton, the religion editor at the Oklahoman newspaper. Her broad coverage of religion and spirituality has taken her to many parts of Oklahoma, as well as to other states and even to Israel. Her career at the Oklahoman has spanned more than three decades. She started in 1986 as a minority intern with the American Society of Newspaper Editors, and in 1988 was promoted to full-time reporter. Carla's beats have included local and metro news, Oklahoma City Hall, transportation, social services, and minority affairs. In the aftermath of the April 19, 1995 Oklahoma City bombing, she was on a team of reporters assigned to provide long-term coverage of the bombing. In particular, she helped chronicle the recovery process for the youngest survivors of the tragedy. In 2002, Carla was assigned to cover religion, writing stories about faith and spirituality for the Oklahoman's religion-themed feature section, as well as breaking news for the paper's main section. Highlights of her career include interviewing the Reverend Billy Graham, one of my mother's favorites, civil rights leader Jesse Jackson, former President Jimmy Carter, and her favorite recording artist, Fred Hammond. She wrote about her experiences visiting Israel as part of the Oklahoma Conference of Churches 2017 Religions United Interfaith Trip to the Holy Land. Also that year, Carla helped share the story of the Reverend Stanley Rother, an Okarchi, Oklahoma priest who was killed in 1981 while serving in Guatemala. In an ongoing story series called Road to Sainthood, Carla helped chronicle the historic beatification ceremony for the martyred priest. Some of her recent stories include the Oklahoma March for Life this past January, the resettlement of Afghan refugees in Oklahoma, and a visit to an Oklahoma City church by Al Robertson from Duck Dynasty, who shared his message of faith and family. An award-winning journalist, Carla was inducted into the Oklahoma Journalism Hall of Fame in 2017 and the Oklahoma African American Hall of Fame in 2018. Welcome, Carla Hinton. We're glad to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, we are really excited about this, Carla, me in particular as a journalist, because I get to interview a journalist. And one of the things I noticed in the bio that you provided to us is that you don't talk a lot about yourself, because as journalists, we learn we're not the story, right? So we're going to make you the story today.
Okay.
On the hot seat. Not really a hot seat.
It's not. It's just a warm, soft, comfortable seat.
Okay.
Yeah, that's okay. It.
So I'd like to start with your personal background, where you were born and raised, whether you were raised in a church, and what that experience was like for you.
Well, I was born and raised here in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. I went to church mostly with my grandparents on a consistent basis. With my parents, my mom, we went to church, but I wouldn't say I was raised in church. I've never felt like I was raised in church, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
As a young adult, I began attending church on a regular basis at a United Methodist Church in Oklahoma City. And it was there that I began to get serious about my faith, my Christian faith. And later, I transitioned to a Pentecostal church People always ask me about that. What was that like? And so quite the transition. And so I consider myself probably leaning Pentecostal, if you were going to ask me. So I think the answer to that question is, for the most part, I wasn't raised in church, but I had some Baptist tradition, you know, presented to me through my grandparents. I was confirmed in the Presbyterian Church through my parents. It's very interesting. And probably I remember being baptized in the Baptist church, my grandparents. So I've had kind of a mix of everything. And like I said, the United Methodist Church was where I found Christ as an adult.
And then is quite a mix, Carla.
Yeah, and then transition to Pentecostalism. Yes.
My mother was raised in a Pentecostal church, so that is definitely not unfamiliar to me.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Where did you go to college, Carla?
I went to a Rose State College, and then I transferred to OU.
Oh, another OU grad.
How did we miss that she's an OU grad? I feel like we
have
not done our homework.
Talk about herself.
Yeah, I don't talk about myself.
Well, hello, fellow Sooner.
So you have been in journalism really your entire career, starting as an intern at the Oklahoman, and then your entire career has been spent at the Oklahoman, right?
Yes.
So you've covered a lot of different beats. And now you're the religion editor. So in Oklahoma, we're in the middle of the Bible Belt. And I would guess that it's ripe for stories about faith and religion. So first I want to ask if you have a dedicated staff, or if it's only you covering the big story of religion in the entire state.
Well, I will tell you this. So I was assigned to the religion beat back in 2002, I think you said that when you were talking about my background. And at that time, we had a religion editor, and we'd had one before that and before that and before that. So there was, you know, obviously a history there. At the time that I was assigned to that beat, there was a part-time person who was helping write those stories, and that was great. She took a retirement. I think I wanted to say she took an early retirement a couple of years later. And so then it was just me. Having said that, I mostly cover religion, but other reporters in the newsroom from time to time, their beats will, encompass religion. And so they will do stories on that beat as well. But for the most part, that's my primary beat. And it's huge. I'm never bored, like ever. And I tell people that religion intersects with every aspect of life, like every aspect. There's nothing. Food, I mean, you name it, you know, food,
that's
prison,
right.
Everything.
Yeah.
You know, just everything. So I'm never bored. And I always tell people, for every one story I do, there were five that I didn't get to.
How do you choose?
It's hard. I had to do it. I was kind of driving myself crazy for years and years and years trying to do everything. And then I had to come to the realization that you just can't. I had a friend, and he's no longer living now, who was writing for the Dallas Morning News. And he told me that you need to stop and do one good story a week. And maybe you can get to some others, but do one good story a week and just concentrate on that, because there's no way you're going to get to everything. So I didn't do that for the next 5 years. And then I thought, okay, I really need to. I think he was right.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it takes us a while to learn those lessons.
Yes. 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 Yes.
So Robin identified, when she introduced you, some of the highlights of your career that you have identified as highlights: Billy Graham, Jesse Jackson, President Jimmy Carter, Fred Hammond, the trip to Israel, the Father Rother story, and of course the Oklahoma City bombing and its aftermath. What do you consider to be the biggest faith or religion story that you've covered?
Wow, that's a good question. That is a good question. I would have to say that it would probably be at this point. Gosh, it's hard. Okay. I would probably say that it was it's the Stanley Rother story, because we are not likely to see anything like this probably in our lifetimes. An Oklahoman, an Okarchi, a farm boy, who went to the priesthood against, many odds, and came out as a martyr in the Catholic faith and is on the path to sainthood. And who knows, Pope Francis could name him a saint at any moment. So I believe that probably is the biggest story. And it took me a while to realize that. It was like kind of a groundswell of excitement for me as a reporter, realizing that being in Oklahoma at that time and covering religion at this time, rather, is a big thing. They're getting ready to open a shrine for Rother in later this year.
Is that in Okarchee?
It is in Oklahoma City. It's right
okay,
off
Oklahoma
south.
City.
Yes, it's right off I-35. So that story just keeps on giving. I mean, it's a story that, like I said, it's a story that will continue for a while. And I believe it's probably going to be the biggest story of my career.
So this ongoing story started as a local story, but it went national and even international, right?
Yes, it did. It did. There are people all over the world looking at, you know, at Oklahoma because of Father Rother and what he did for his little Guatemalan parish. You know, I don't know if a lot of people know this, and I know we've had this in our stories, but they loved him so much. And his Oklahoma family members knew that the people in Guatemala loved him so much that when they brought his body back to Oklahoma for burial, it was without his heart. His heart is buried in Guatemala. It's just one of those stories that it's just so compelling. And as I began to do stories on Father Rother, you know, you feel like you get to know people, and it's just an interesting person, very kind, very caring, and he's inspired people all over the world, like you said.
Can you share with our listeners the story? His story, what happened to him in Guatemala?
Sure. From what I understand, he was one of the Oklahoma City Archdiocese, a priest who agreed to go to Guatemala for a mission, a church that they had set up there. And he quickly became immersed in the life of the people there. The interesting thing about him was when he was in seminary, he had a difficult time at the beginning learning Latin, and in fact was kind of kicked out of the seminary because of it. And the archbishop at the time just felt so strongly that he was destined to be a priest, that they got him tutors and he got back into a seminary. And of course, ultimately he did become a priest, but he gets to Guatemala and he somehow learns their language there and begins to really help the people there. At the time they were very poor. It's a poor parish. A lot of people were struggling. He, growing up on a farm, you know, he was able to help them with their crops, and he built a medical clinic, and they were doing all sorts of things. But his actions on behalf of his parishioners caught the attention of someone. There was a civil war going on then. And his actions caught the attention of someone who didn't like it. And at some point he was learned that he was on what's called a kill list, someone who was going to be killed eventually. And he returned to Oklahoma because of it. But he was here for a short while, and he decided to go back. And he said the famous words, "A shepherd will not run," or something to those that effect. And he decided to go back to his parish and his flock as the shepherd. And he was killed in July of 1981 in the rectory of his parish church by unknown assailants. Still to this day, they don't know who killed him. So to many people, he is a you know, an inspiration of someone who took their vow to God and to the church to heart. No matter the consequences.
That would be tough, knowing what you were going back to face.
Yeah. Yes. I can't imagine.
I can't either. I'm curious about if that's kind of like one of the biggest stories that you've covered that is sort of on the bright side. What's been like, I say bright side, his martyrdom is not bright, but you know what I mean. What's been one of the most controversial stories that you've covered?
Well, I have to say, and I'm asked sometimes to go talk to college classes, and sometimes this comes up. I did attend a Black Mass that was hosted by a group of Satanists in Oklahoma City. Yes, it was held, it was several years ago, and a group of Satanists rented out the basement theater at the Civic Center Music Hall, and the city of Oklahoma City was bound to rent this facility because of, it was constitutionally their right to be able to do that. So anyway, there was a lot of lead up to this event. You can imagine, you know, the Christian community was outraged. The day of the event, there were people from all over the country here and maybe even the world. I know that there were several, maybe I think all four networks or all the three major networks and maybe cable networks were here. And before I went, we had to purchase tickets to get in. Before we went, my editors told me, because they know I'm a Christian, they told me I didn't have to go. But I thought, are you kidding? Of course I'm going to go. As a journalist, you go, right?
So that's right.
Yeah, I wasn't afraid. I wasn't afraid. In fact, to their credit, the Satanists and the leader of the Satanists were very accommodating. I mean, when I got there and got in my seat, I wasn't the only journalist there, but when I got there and got in my seat, they made sure that I was okay. I had been doing stories leading up to, and I think I want to say they trusted me. I wasn't scared, but I have to say that while I was there during this ceremony, so the Black Mass was a parody of an actual Catholic Mass. And you can understand why Catholics and other Christians were very upset about this. And one of the things they did was they invoked the name of Satan, and they called all these names of Satan down, you know, to come into the room. Oof. And I have to say, I began to feel a little uncomfortable as a Christian. That was the only time during that moment was I realized what was happening. I'm like, should I be here? But anyway, you know, it passed. There was probably a minute where I felt extreme, you know, uncomfort. I think my ears, you know, I don't know. I flushed a little bit. I think it was just uncomfortable, but I got through it and went back to write the story, of course. And at that time we had late deadlines and I was able to get it in the next day's paper, but I took care to write that because it was a controversial topic and people from all over the state had sent me emails and I got phone calls from people saying, we heard that you're going, we're going to pray for you, that sort of thing. I just knew that a lot of people would be reading that story, but it was controversial. It was controversial. That's probably the most controversial I've done in a while.
You said, and I love this, as a journalist, you go.
Right. Oh, yes.
That's the one that stands out in your mind that was like, oh, I got to go.
Sure, sure. Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. I definitely felt compelled to go. I never even thought about not going. There was some excitement. I mean, as a Christian, I wasn't thrilled necessarily, but there was excitement as a journalist that I was going to to go. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a big, exciting story to be able to tell.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Sure.
Well, that segues a little bit about into what we talk about a lot on the Incarcerated Christian, which is not only Christianity. We talk to peoples of all faiths, including me. I am Jewish, but I have sort of a feel for the levels of incarceration that we talk about, ranging from minimal incarceration to maximum incarceration. Yeah, and Robin's definitely, that was her supermax lockdown. I'm wondering, Carla, if you have ever written about a religious miseducation or a religious abuse.
Let's see. It depends on what you mean by religious abuse. Do you mean someone abusing their power as a religious leader or someone giving out misinformation to their flock? Something like that?
All of that. Yes.
Yeah. Yes and yes.
Ooh, I have. You know, they're just so fraught with things I don't like, which is, you know, just calling out people for misdeeds. And in fact, that was one of the first time I had to do something like that. That was one of the first times I thought, I don't think I'm going to be able to do this, because I got into this thinking that I was going to be doing all positive stories And that's just not the case. I don't know what I was thinking. I don't know. Why would I have thought that? But anyway, I was very Pollyanna, I will have to admit, when I first got to this beat. Yes, I did do, I have done some stories about pastors who have been credibly accused of things like sexual abuse. Recently, there were stories where we featured people who gave out what a lot of people consider would be misinformation about the COVID vaccines. So it's very, very tricky. And I was, as a Christian and someone who takes faith very seriously, you know, you're always taught that, you know, leaders, the religious leaders, rabbis and priests, pastors, imams, are people to be respected, and you take their what they're saying, their word for heart. But as a journalist, you know, you there's always has to be that skepticism. And then when you find out something that they, you know, that has been done, you do it. I do remember one time I did a story. There was a well-known pastor in the Oklahoma City area who had committed adultery. And I had done several stories on him, and I wasn't necessarily interested in doing that story. I mean, why would I do that? That sounds to me like an issue for him and his spouse. But one of our editors found out about it, and the church had sent a news release about it. I'm like, oh my goodness.
Oh yeah.
And so with the, you know, some of the details, and so I ended up having to write that, and that made me uncomfortable. It was what it was. It was a well-known pastor that this happened to. And so that's pretty tough. That I have to say, those are the days that I don't like. And they affect you for a long time. I don't think people realize, well, I don't know about other journalists, but for me, those kinds of stories, they affect me for a long time. You feel bad for what happened. You feel bad that you're having to write about it and spread it all over. It's just one of those, it's very difficult. That's probably the most difficult part of my job.
You bring up a really interesting point, Carla, and that is that we think as journalists that we're objective, but no human being can be totally objective. So you bring in your experiences and your beliefs into every story, no matter how hard you try to keep them out, right?
Right. It's true, you know, and I thought for a long time, I thought, that, okay, you can be, you know, extremely objective. You can be totally objective. But, you know, it's just, I don't think anybody can. You're always going to bring your own life experiences and, you know, the things that you've been taught and that sort of thing. You're going to bring those to whatever you do. So, right.
But you still try to look at your story as you're covering it and writing it with a very critical eye.
Yes, especially those types of stories. And because one of the things about me, too, is that I have to look at it in a different way, because I feel like I do have that. I come with that, you know, respect for the religious leaders and just respect for faith. So it's almost kind of like I have to look at things like, am I being too, you know, lenient? Am I being too, am I not being hard enough? Are we not looking at this more critically? And my editors are good about that, you know, so that's one thing. But having editors who will say, hey, you need to ask so-and-so this question. Did you ask so-and-so that? Go back, you know, and they're good about that. And then that's what the editors do. That's why they're there. Yeah.
I have a follow-up question on the pastor in Oklahoma City that you were uncomfortable writing about. Was he asked to step down by his church? Is that why they were issuing a press release, or did he stay the pastor?
He left. I believe left. He stepped down. He was stepping. They were saying he stepped down. Later,
because of this reason.
Right. Because of this reason.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. Right. So that's, yeah.
That public spectacle part makes me really uncomfortable. I feel like it's like public shaming. And
yes,
I'm like,
yes,
no,
yes.
No wonder you feel bad about, like, that sort of makes you a participant in public shaming.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And surely years later, because I believe he's back in ministry now, but and so years later, you know, that reverberates. You realize that's exactly what it is. It was to me anyway. The church chose to do that, and like you said, there's that sense of you know, public shaming.
I know we're going to talk in a little bit about some of your favorite interviews. Robin will want to ask about
Billy Graham.
Billy Graham. for sure. And I will want to ask about Jesse Jackson for sure.
Okay.
But before we get there, in your coverage, have you ever covered religious cults and or survivors from cults?
You know what? I have not. I know that once, gosh, this has probably been maybe 10 years ago, we were doing stories on a organization that moved here and built a kind of a complex, but it was given to our police reporter, that story. He was the one who got tips about it. And so he was the person that did it. But that was as far as I got to religious cults. I think they said if they needed me, they would kind of have me come and help him. But I think he did a good job on it. It's very interesting because those kinds of stories, you know, you can say that, okay, many people believe this is a cult, but it's whether or not, unless they've done something criminal, you know, or financial, you know, financially wrong or something like that, it's hard to pin them down and say that is a cult. And you probably, you know, that. So I was kind of glad that I didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
I watched it from afar and thought that's a hard story to do. That's a hard story to do.
Speaking of stories, I don't know why this popped into my head when you were talking, Carla, but one of my favorite people in Oklahoma, he's one of the ones that I studied as part of my doctoral research, Carlton Pearson in Tulsa. Did you cover, this is a man who was it a Pentecostal church?
Yes.
And then
yes.
He stopped believing in hell. And then he started preaching that he stopped believing in hell. And then he lost his church.
Yes.
You got to cover all of that?
I did. And that was one of the other more difficult stories I've had to do. Because, you know, I consider myself Pentecostal. I'd been to his church. He used to have his church in Tulsa, they had a conference called Azusa. And I had gone to that at least once. And the times I didn't go, I had their CDs, you know, with all the music. Because he could sing. I don't know if you remember that. He can sing.
Oh, I didn't know that he could sing.
Oh, yeah. He's a great singer. And so there was music and you know, all of these well-known evangelists would come and, you know, preach. And so people from my church would go every year. And so to hear about this, that this was happening, at first I didn't think it was going to be something that I needed to do. But eventually we realized that, okay, we needed to maybe do something. And he agreed to an interview. Very nice man. And he agreed to an interview. And the people at my own church at the time were, I don't know, I think they were apprehensive about me going to talk to him because what he was saying, like you said, he didn't believe that there was a hell, that Jesus came to save everyone, and they didn't have to necessarily profess that he was their savior. They were worried. I think they were worried, which I was a little taken aback by that. But I did go to see him. He very persuasive person, as most religious leaders are, right?
Yes, that's right.
That's one of the reasons probably why they're leaders. Anyway, but I just thought he was the nicest person, you know, and whether I agreed with him or not, you know, the story was that all of these things that were happening to him. And now he is a pastor in Tulsa with a Unitarian church and seems to be doing very well there. And I've actually met some of his, I've actually told this story for a group, and one of his members came in and talked to me. And so that was really interesting to be able to talk to her after saying that, you know, that was probably one of the more uncomfortable times that I had to interview someone. It was uncomfortable because I knew people were concerned about me. But other than that, he was a very nice person. He outlined all his beliefs. Like I said, very persuasive. Yes. And then when we ran the story, people were mad at me. Because they thought, why did you give him a voice? You know, he's
right,
a heretic.
Right.
You know, he'd been branded a heretic by his peers.
I know. And I'm a big fan of his. I love his gospel of inclusion work. I mean, it's
yes.
So refreshing from the kind of, you know, dark kind of experiencing that we kind of cover. So, yeah.
And he still stands by that. And you have to admire him. After losing, you know, his church and, you know, of course, his flock dwindled, I believe there were some people who left with him. But, you know, it was a mega church. He had a mega
thousands
church.
Thousands of people.
Yeah. Thousands of people. And then people, you know, all across the world. So anyway, you have to respect that he that's what he believes. And so he took what he had to take from the world.
Was that a story, Carla, that went beyond the borders of Oklahoma?
Yes, if in terms of whether you think people from outside Oklahoma, yes, for sure. Because I
a big story.
I got the emails. Yeah, who were upset with me, but obviously it was a story, and that told you right there. Just the fact that they were emailing me about it told you that there were a lot of people looking on. And I think that was the last story I did. I think I tried to get an interview with him years later and wasn't able to, but I did see him just a couple of years ago at a Dead Center festival there was a story about the church in general and the different kind of churches. And they were doing something about his church. And so he was there.
Would you explain for our listeners what the Dead Center Festival is?
Oh, sure. It is it's a film festival that's here, that's held annually in Oklahoma City. And it's very prestigious. It's grown to be very prestigious to have a film premiere there. And so it gives Oklahomans, particularly people in the metro area, an opportunity to see documentaries and films that maybe they wouldn't see otherwise.
So let's get to some of your favorite interviews.
Okay.
If we can. I think there's going to be some really good stuff in here.
Okay.
And I'm going to defer to Robin on Billy Graham right now.
I grew up watching Billy Graham, hearing about Billy Graham. My mother absolutely adored Billy Graham. I'm sure that she attended some of his tent meetings and, you know, all of that stuff. Why were you interviewing him? And just how did that go?
Well, so I became religion editor in June of 2002. And unbeknownst to me, there were some wheels moving to get Billy Graham to do at least one last mission here in Oklahoma City. Those are the huge evangelistic efforts that he had all across the world. And, you know, he was older at that point, and, you know, those were dwindling to maybe a few a year. And the Oklahoma City leaders, the faith leaders, were successful in getting him to come. So I want to say it was that next year, 2003, that he came. And one of the things, so there was a lot of lead up. I did gobs of stories on just the lead up to him coming, because it's a huge thing. I mean, it's a huge thing to bring him in. It's big. Yeah. You have to have, you know, the faith leaders on board, or the Christian faith leaders on board. And I got a call from his folks that had, you know, moved here to Oklahoma City to get it all squared away, that he wanted to allow me to interview him. And I thought, what? I didn't know that was going to happen. And they said, well, usually he picks one local media person to interview. And so he chose me. And so, So I'm like, oh my goodness. But, you know, I feel like that whole year I was prepared. I think if I'd walked in even, you know, 3 weeks out, I wouldn't have been prepared, but I was prepared. And so this sounds like, I will let you know that I have this old nickname is the church lady. And so here's where the church lady kicks in. This is where the church lady kicks in, because I have to see things. I see things through that lens, you know, right? So I walk into this room, and I have to say that I felt, people asked me later what it was like. I said, it was very surreal, and the room was just peaceful. I felt peace. Mm. I told myself, I said, he's at peace with God and man. And that's what came to me at that time. And it was just so, it was a pleasant interview. And that's probably one of my favorites. Of course, you know, later, especially, you know, when he died, you know, this happens when anybody dies, the people, their critics who come out and say, well, he didn't do this and he didn't do that, but that sort of thing. And that may be, but at that time I felt, it was a very pleasant, interview, and it was a good interview.
Did you write in your story that he was at peace with God and with man?
I didn't write that story, but I wrote it. I did a column after he died, and I wrote it because afterwards they sent me, after that, they sent me two copies of a picture of me shaking hands with him. One of them I have in my office here. And so one, you know, I gave to the Oklahoman for whatever it meant, because, you know, that was a big deal to get to interview him. And so I did tell people that in that column, you know, after his death, that's what I felt at the time. And I felt okay with that, because I never tried to hide my being a Christian, that sort of thing. And I think people, non-Christians, have been pretty respectful of that because I respect them. I've done stories on atheists and we're all fine together. I'm not offended by anything they say you just can't go into it as a journalist trying to be offended by everything. Yeah.
That's so good. I wanted to ask a follow-up on the Billy Graham, which is, okay. did you, though it's not happening in Oklahoma, did you cover the stories around his son?
Yes. Yes,
you did cover that.
I have done some of them. And of course, I've been to a couple of his events here in, I think I went to one in Tulsa maybe. And then I've done a couple here when he came. And I think I did do something on the fact that he's been called Islamophobic and maybe a little more, not a little. I think he's been called more, he gets into politics a little bit more than his dad. And so
absolutely,
I think I've done it.
Yes.
I've done at least one story about that. Yeah. And you know, he's been forthcoming too. He'll talk to you about that. Franklin Graham.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk now about the Reverend Jesse Jackson. What was that experience like?
Well, that was really interesting. I want to say, I think I've actually talked to him more than once, but I think he was here. He came, in particular, he came after the bombing, after the Oklahoma City bombing. And I believe it was, I'm thinking that's when it was. There were Black pastors in Oklahoma City who were raising funds among their congregation and then, you know, Oklahoma City for some of the Black victims, because they wanted to be able to help them. And I even think it wasn't just Black victims. I have to say, I'll take that back. It was members of their churches and then people who came, because I have to take that back. It wasn't just Black people. But I think Jesse Jackson came then, I'm thinking he did. And so he was very, very nice, very personable. What was interesting was that, you know, he has this tone, or he did, and where he would kind of rhyme, or you know, kind of
preacher
had a
tone. Pop.
He has that preacher cadence.
Yeah.
And so when I was talking to him, I'm like, there it is, it's coming. Uh-huh. And so anyway, that was pretty interesting. You know, as a black American, I just thought this is surreal to be able to talk to him, and he's going now, you know. So anyway, keep hope alive. I remember he said, there it is, he's gonna say it for me. So yeah.
And he said it, keep hope alive.
He did.
I would actually love to be in a room with him.
Yes.
He's wonderful. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I've never gotten a chance to talk to him about civil rights issues. Maybe once, but I would have loved to have talked to him about, you know, civil rights and being one of the youngest members of Martin Luther King's ministry team. That would have been great. Yeah.
Well, maybe you just need to give him a call, Carla.
Yeah, we did. What's interesting was that he was staying at the same. We were a team of us of reporters from Oklahoma. The Oklahoman went to Tulsa for the centennial of the Tulsa Race Massacre, and we rode up in the he was in our lobby at the hotel. He was in our hotel. And they asked, do you want an interview with him? Because they knew who I was. And we were going out. We actually had to be somewhere we had to be. And I was like, I would love to, but I can't. And it never came back again. But of course, I would have told you. Yeah. Yeah. But we saw him later. Yeah. We saw him later at events. Yeah.
And that was just last year.
Yeah. That was just
2021.
Last year. Right. Right. Yeah. That's right. That's right.
Well, I have one more question, and then I'm going to let Robin do some of her stuff. Maybe a little, maybe not. So there's, I'm teasing. There are so many big breaking news in the faith and religion arena. And some of them I know you can't cover directly, like Beth Moore, for example, is one that always comes to my mind. But my question is, how do you localize stories like that other than reposting them on social media, for example, which I know you do a lot of for national stories? How do you localize those big national stories?
Oh, some like those stories, sometimes it's hard because, so when Beth Moore came here, actually she was here, I want to say she was here in, maybe it was 2019. It was before the pandemic, you know, obviously. And she was here. And so I was told by some women that she was coming. And I don't know if I got to interview her, but I did get to interview the people that were, you know, helping bring her here. And I got to go to her one night for free and kind of do a story about what she said and everything. And so when she, I knew we have a huge, she has a huge following here in Oklahoma. And then when she cut ties with the Southern Baptist, I thought, oh my gosh, I did try to reach out to some local people and they wouldn't talk. I didn't, I wasn't able to get anyone.
Oh, they wouldn't talk.
And that happens a lot here. That happens a lot.
Yes.
Yeah, it does. Okay. And it's frustrating because mm-hmm. you know that it's a story. So what we did was we ran an AP story. I want to say it was an Associated Press story or another Wire story about it. Because I said, I know that Oklahomans are talking about this. And I'm not going to let, just because some they won't talk to me about it doesn't mean we're not going to put it in the paper.
Yeah. Such a big story.
It was a big story. That was huge. That was one of the Religion News Writers Association has a top 10 that they do every year at the end of the year of stories. And I want to say that was either in the top 10 or the top 15 of religion stories in America. So, or in the world, actually. So
that's big. Yeah.
Big time stuff. It's hard because what you want to do in order to do that, to localize a national story, you really need to get some Oklahoman's perspective. Sometimes I've been able to do it, like the hostage situation in Colleyville, Texas. I was able to, after the fact, obviously, I was able to talk to all three rabbis here in the Oklahoma City area and get their take on everything. And very interesting. They're always willing to talk to me about things like that. And I came away with lots of good information for our readers. So that's good, but you always have to have people to talk to you. And sometimes you can try for days and days and not get anything. And then I usually have to decide whether I'm going to go ahead and go with the national without a local perspective or not. Like times when it's Beth Moore, you do that. You do it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's too big of a story. She was such a huge figure for Southern Baptist.
Yes.
And the Southern Baptists here, huge.
Yes. Now, they're the largest faith group.
Yeah, I was raised Southern Baptist, but they won't. Yeah, that's my background. They won't talk. That makes me also wonder about, and I don't know how to ask this question. It's a little impertinent, so forgive me if it's horribly butchered. But I think about how churches can get involved in community matters. I was wondering about, like, for example, I'm sure Black churches were. I'm hoping Black churches were involved in supporting Black Lives Matter. And I don't know about white churches. I know white churches in Norman that were definitely in supportive of Black Lives Matter. How do you navigate those waters? How do you navigate those waters? Can you get people to talk? Or maybe you have too many people talking in that case.
It was difficult. But now I have to say, after the murder of George Floyd, after all that happened, and I can say murder because the police officer was convicted. After that, you know, the Black community wanted to talk, particularly the faith community. And they were talking. They were preaching and, you know, like I said, participating in marches and things like that. And not just the Black churches, but white churches. So that it was pretty easy to get people to talk to me about that. And even some of the what a lot of people would consider maybe some of the more conservative ministers, were willing to talk about the fact that, okay, there is a issue. There's a race problem in in America that's ongoing, and this was something that affected a lot of people. So that was pretty easy kind of to get people to talk about. But I have to say, as time wore on and some deep questions needed to be asked, you know, like there were some Black ministers who said, we need to be asking some deep questions. It's not the Black churches can't be the only ones talking about this. It needs to be white churches.
Yes, I agree.
And so I saw their point. And so I did find, I asked some ministers about that. And there were some who were making the difficult decision. And I say difficult because I think they were aware that some of their congregation wouldn't be happy about it. Right.
Right.
And so
there were
some who were doing that. And those people who let me know that they were talking about it in their church, I did stories about them. I did stories about them. But as a Black journalist too, and I think that's why you said this is, you think this is an impertinent question. It's not, but it is something that as a Black journalist, you, you know, you feel, it adds another layer to, you know, what you're doing when you're taking on issues of race in the church.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or any faith. Yeah.
Before I left the Baptist church I was attending, a Black Baptist church in Norman. I just absolutely loved it, left because the theology wasn't working for me. But it is true. It's the most segregated place in America, Sunday mornings and churches. It's true. Yeah. So I just wondered if you were able to get people, not white folks, if you were able to get white folks to talk on the record, because that big target, especially in our neck of the woods, it's a big target if you...
Yes. And support. Here's the thing. So the ones there were, the people that talk were the people who were actually making, were trying to make an effort to maybe either be more inclusive, or they were actually, you know, doing things in their congregation. Like one pastor in the Edmond area, he went to school, or I want to say he had his minor in like civil rights or Martin Luther King. And so he was doing a whole Wednesday night series on the civil rights movement and how it was birthed from the church and the theological implications of it. And so I went to that, and that was really interesting. He had one of the original sit-inners here from Oklahoma City come and speak one night, and I went to that. And so those people will talk, but it's the other people, I would say white congregation members, who are hesitant to talk. And I understood that, because like you said, they may feel a target on their back. And I've always wondered sometimes if they feel reluctant to talk to a Black person, you know. I told my editors that you can't not put that factor in there. You can't not do it, right? Because I've had to deal with that all my life, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's racism, but it's something. It's maybe, you know, can I trust this person? Because they may not see it as I see, and they may skew the whole story or something like that, you know.
So I anticipating perceived judgment or something like that.
Are times when people talk to me. There are times when people have talked to me over the years about stories about race and racism. And it's almost like when they're being honest, it's almost like they're kind of apologetic to me about it. And I'm like, no, be honest, because that's what makes my story better. I need you to be honest. And I'm not going to take what you say to heart. And that you have to build that up. You know, you have to build that up over time, is that you just don't, you can't, if someone, you know, thinks that you're inferior or whatever the case may be, or your community's problems are, you know, their own problems, and it doesn't matter. You just
not structural.
You can't take that. You just can't take it to heart.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Carla, unfortunately, I'm sorry, I just jumped right in there as usual.
Deborah's the one that keeps us, I say this to every guest, she's the one that keeps us on our time target, because I will just keep going. Keep talking.
I would if we could, but unfortunately you're so good. We can't. And this has been such a great conversation. We have one last question for you that we've been asking all our guests.
Okay.
And that is, what is your favorite spiritual practice?
What is my favorite spiritual practice? I would say I love to sing. So I love to sing songs, Christian songs. And as a matter of fact, my daughter's always saying, you always have a song for everything. They bubble up in my spirit. I feel that they bubble up in my spirit. And I just, whatever it is, it could be an old hymn that I learned back in the Baptist church with my grandmother. It could be a Christian contemporary song. It could be a gospel song, a more urban, contemporary feel. But I've always got that in my heart. And my friends know if I'm singing, it's a reflection of what I'm feeling, depending on what the song is. But that's probably my favorite. I sang in the choir and was on a praise and worship team at one point. So it's just part of who I am. I think that's my favorite spiritual tradition.
That's awesome. I love that. Do you just sometimes, or maybe a lot, burst into song when the
Yes, my coworkers, they would always say, "Oh, Carla's feeling it because she's singing." And
church lady is singing.
I would always apologize. They said, no, it's okay. We know it's just you, and so.
The music is so good, though. I mean, that is one thing I do miss, is the music that raised me. So I still sing. I still sing the hymnals.
Yes.
Well, the ones that make my heart sing. I think that's how you phrased it. Yeah, I'm still singing those too. Yeah.
Yes.
What a lovely practice. And it what is. A wonderful time we've had with you, Carla.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Thank you.
It was really fun.
if people would like to maybe potentially reach out to you, how would they do that?
Okay. You can send me an email at chinton@oklahoman, that's Oklahoma with an N, .com. chinton@oklahoman.com. We're working remotely, but I'm on that email all the time.
We will definitely include that in our show notes.
You also have an account on Twitter.
Yes, it's OK Relig. OKReLIG.
Religion.
Yes, yes. And I have a Facebook page as well. It's if you look up Carla Hinton Author, then you'll find me.
Carla Hinton Author.
That's another question that we're going to have to ask another time.
Okay. Boo. Okay. What? My little ears perked up.
Yes.
It's not my personal Facebook because that one is kept just for personal, and I don't have as many followers as my children think I should have, but I don't care because I feel like I don't want that to be, I do have a few, what I consider my beat sources on Facebook, but most of that is because, I've known many of them for a while, and that's, I follow them because I have stories. I get stories from them. Yeah, social media is its own thing, as you well know. And so I can't do a lot of things that my colleagues do, even though sometimes they want me to, which is kind of throw my opinion out there just a little, or, you know, I just won't do it. And maybe they don't throw their opinion out there, but you have to be really careful. I have to be careful that I'm not advocate journalist, because that's a thing, and I'm okay with that, but that's not, I don't do that. It's a minefield. It is a minefield, but I do regularly put my stories on that Facebook page that the Oklahoman put there for me. And sometimes that's how I ask readers questions, you know, for feedback and things like that. One of the questions that I asked on that Facebook page, particularly during the height of the pandemic, was had people are they wearing masks, and had they had anyone tell them that they didn't have enough faith or they wouldn't be wearing the mask.
I got
a lot of people talking to me about that. And so apparently that was a thing, because someone had come to me when I was in Tulsa doing a story. A Christian had come up to me and said, can you take down your mask? Don't you have faith? And I thought, what's that have to do with it?
Exactly. So, that's what I'm thinking. I have faith that the mask will work.
Yes. So that was one of the ways that I have a kind of an exchange with the readers.
Interesting. That's so good. I wish we had thought to ask you about that earlier, but thank you for that.
That's
example.
Okay. That's okay.
We're going to have Carla back. We've got two questions already.
Okay. Absolutely. Okay. Carla, again, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been pleasant.
Thank you for listening to the Incarcerated Christian Podcast. We invite you to rate and review our show. And remember, you can find this interview and others on our website, theincarceratedchristian.com, or anywhere you access podcasts. Don't forget to connect with us on Instagram and TikTok at The Incarcerated Christian, and on Twitter at @TCPodcast_. You can find more information about us and our show on our website. Again, that's theincarceratedchristian.com. Until next time, go forth in love and light.